Thank you for joining us for another lesson from God's Word. The West Huntsville Church of Christ at Providence is located at 1519 Old Monrovia Road, Northwest, Huntsville, Alabama, 35806. Anytime you're in the Huntsville area, we hope you'll stop in and be part of our worship. Sunday morning worship is at 9 o'clock, with Bible class immediately following. Sunday evening worship is at 5. Midweek Bible study is held Wednesdays at 7.
Our scripture reading this evening is Mark 16, 15 through 16. And he said to them, "Go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. He who believes and is baptized will be saved, but he who does not believe will be condemned." You may be seated.
I don't know how the preacher stands up here and preaches every Sunday looking at these lights up here. But they do it. I want to thank the elders for allowing me this opportunity to talk to you a little bit about our work in India. West Huntsville has been involved in work in India for several years. In the last few years, we transitioned the oversight of that work to the Willette Church in Red Bowling Springs, Tennessee. Willette Church of Christ oversees the work in India that we have a part in here. They've been overseeing this work for around 30 years, I think. What is amazing is that this work began over there, I think, in the 70s. And what it has grown into at this point here. And we'll look at that a little later on there. But what we are involved in as a church here at West Huntsville, we're supporting preachers. We're supporting bicycles, and we're also purchasing Bibles. And those are something that's very needful there. We think about a bicycle. Why do you need a bicycle? Well, as you'll see in our presentation, the number of preachers there are and the number of congregations that they preach at on the average, they have to have a means of transportation, and these villages are spread out, and so a bicycle, they may have 6, 7, 8, 10 miles each Sunday to travel. And if you're walking, that's a long way. But if you have a bicycle, it makes it a lot better to be able to do that. There are many individuals here at West Huntsville who support the work personally. And for that, I'm thankful for that. The elders at Willette, insist on there being a monthly report on this work. And if you'll look out on the table, out in the foyer out there, this is the report for February. I need to stay close to the mic, I guess. This is a report for February. And this goes out every month. They insist on that. Also, each month, there is a financial report that goes out that accounts for every penny that is spent there. All of the money that West Huntsville contributes to go to the India work goes to India. There's nothing taken out of it for overhead or anything else. Every penny that you give, even as an individual, every penny that you give goes to India. The overhead, if you want to call it that, or the cost of operation or whatever, the church at Willette pays that. They pay Zach's salary. And Zach, of course, is my son, and I'm proud of him for doing this work. Never dreamed that one day he would be the coordinator for the work in India. But it is something that we're very proud of. We do these, Zach does these reports, numerous congregations every year. There are about 120, I think 120, 130 congregations that support the work in India. And almost every one of those congregations gets a personal report once a year from Zach or one of the elders at the church at West Huntsville. And the elders at Willette are very active in the work in India. Several of those elders traveled to India quite often to check on the work over there and involved in it. Their trip for this fall is already planned. Zach called me the other day, and there are seven people who will be going to India this fall. There's four women, and that is unusual, and three men. They will be, they're kind of changing the direction of what they are going to be doing in India. When Lisa and I became involved in it back in the 90s, I guess, and then I made my first trip in 2002, we were training preachers, primarily what we did. They would bring the preachers together at two different locations, and there would be 700-800 preachers there, and we'd spend lessons for 3 or 4 days. We would do 3 or 4 lessons a day, each one of us there, training preachers. But they're going back to that. And there are so many preachers there now that they need good training and continuing to educate them and help the church to grow there. Zach put this together. I told somebody tonight, it's about an hour and a half long, and so, but I was going to cut it down to an hour. We will not we'll not go through everything that he has in here, but we'll talk about a lot of the stuff there. Again, I want to thank you for your support. There were 5,720 baptisms in India in this work in 2025. That's the most prolific work that this church here supports as far as baptisms are concerned. No other work that we're involved in comes close to this. And, of course, there are a lot of people who are involved in preaching and teaching over there that help these this number of baptisms, but they're working daily in preaching the gospel over there. When we were on our trip this time, and, of course, Glenn Colley went with us, and it was Glenn and I and Zach, and we had 633, I think, baptisms while we were there. And so there are a tremendous amount of baptisms. The good thing about these baptisms are that 80 to 90% of these people are going to remain faithful. They stay with them. They don't just go into a village and baptize someone. They teach them, and they stay with them, and they help them to grow. And so the church is strong there, in these areas. The emphasis on this presentation that Zach has put together, of course, has been on Ephesians 4:4 through 6, something that we drill with our kids on kids' things a lot. Almost every Sunday night, Keith has something to say about the seven ones, and that was the emphasis that Zach put on this. There's one body. The church in India, and we try to emphasize to those people over there that they're just not the Church of Christ in India. They're the one body of the Church of Christ all over the world. If I'm preaching on Sundays at a congregation, I will tell them that today there will be people who are halfway around the world who will be worshiping just like you are. The same way that you are. They'll be singing and they'll be praying, giving, preaching, and taking the Lord's Supper, just like you are. And one day, maybe you will be together with them in eternity, and you'll all worship God together. But we're one body. We're not many different bodies, but one body. You'll see in the picture there, Zach, in one of the pictures, he is at a location. They had a church building there, and it was actually made out of mud, I think, and it didn't withstand the weather, and it's collapsed, and now they're meeting on a rooftop. You see a picture of Glenn standing at a new church building that he opened up while he was there. So, and then you can see in the very back of this thatched roof here, I'm standing back there. I preached there one day, and I actually had to get down and crawl in there because I couldn't walk in. And so there are a lot of congregations who are meeting just like that in a thatched roof building. That's all they have, but they're meeting. and they're one body. They're the same church as West Huntsville is. And so you'll see many different types of things when you're in India when people are together worshiping. The one body of the church in India, there's 3,780 congregations in the Lord's Church there that have been planted there since the 70s. And there's approximately, out of that number of congregations, 1,800 of them have elders. And that's roughly 48%. 48% of the churches there have elders. And that was the emphasis that they put on when I first started going there, was teaching the preachers. What my job was to teach the preachers to grow their churches and to develop elderships over there. And they're doing that. And that is good. When the church gets to the point that they have elders, they're independent, they're able to take care of themselves, and that's what they're striving for over there. There are approximately 350,000 Christians there, and that's an average of about 92 people to the congregation over there. Now, some congregations may have 1,000 people. At Rampa, at Tooney, they probably have 1,000 members at those congregations. But you saw the hut that I was in, there was probably maybe 10 or 15, 20 there at that location. But the average is 92 people, and it's growing all the time. There are 1,229 preachers that are preaching the gospel over there, and that's the average of 3 congregations per preacher. And so that's why it's essential for them to have a means of getting around, because some of them, they're not in an area where there's bus service, and bus service is great in India. It's better than any place I've ever been, but some places they can't get a bus too, and so they travel by bicycle in doing that. Of that 1,229 preachers, only 450 of them receive any kind of support. That support is $50 a month, and it's been the same for as long as I've been involved in the work over there. That's not a lot of money, but a lot of these men are preaching in places where they have absolutely nothing. And you can attend there at a worship service, especially if it's on a Sunday when they're having a Sunday worship, and their contribution is a bowl of rice or something similar to that. They bring that. They offer what they have. They just don't have anything, because a lot of them are living day to day. And sometimes I think we need to learn to live day to day. Other preachers receive some help with their travels. And when I saw this, I kind of laughed, but 50 cents to, what is it, $11? Now you think about, well, what is 50 cents going to do for them? Well, you know, it may buy them a bus ticket to and from where they've got to go if they've got to travel a good distance. So it's important for them. But there are 1,229 preachers, and more preachers being added every month over there, because a lot of denominational preachers are being taught the gospel and being converted. There's one Spirit. The one Spirit is one that gave us the Word. And the Word is what we preach when we go there. The Word is so important to them. We take for granted Bibles. I bet you each one of you here may have 4 or 5, at least 5 or 6, maybe more than that. Lisa and I have got a big shelf full of Bibles. These people, a lot of these people don't have one. And when they're baptized, and you can see Zach's handing out, They're given a Bible. They're given a New Testament, and they're given a song book. But West Huntsville participates in buying these Bibles. They can actually, they have a printing press, but they can buy a Bible cheaper than they can print it. They're able to buy a Bible for about $1, I think is what it is, for a New Testament. It is amazing. They buy these from the Bible Society of India. But it's amazing, because India is a Hindu nation, but they buy them from the Bible Society of India. I heard the other day, this is a side note for you, I read the other day, there was a question asked, do you know where more Bibles are printed than any other place in the world? They asked this question. China. It's hard to believe, isn't it? Hopefully some of those people who are printing those Bibles are reading them. But these people, they're so excited to get a Bible. And you're helping them to get a Bible. They'll knock you down to get your Bible, and because they want that and their songbook, and they're out of that Bible. They can read the same thing that you and I read. They can grow in their faith. There's one hope. There's one hope for them, just like there's one hope for us. And I think that to them, this hope is more than what we really appreciate. Because of the circumstances that majority of them live in, there's not a lot of hope for them in their daily lives. But there's one hope for them in the gospel. There's a hope for them that one day they'll be in heaven. You see Glenn up there preaching, and I'll talk about this meeting that we had a little later on there. But in the one below there, we left here on Monday afternoon. We usually leave Nashville in the afternoon. We fly to New York. We have a 2 or 3 hour layover there, and then we get on a plane and for 15 and a half hours, depends on the weather, and then we get to Delhi late at night, and then we get up early, about 3 o'clock the next morning, and get to the airport. It's the busiest airport I've ever seen in my life, Delhi is, to get through the tickets and the customs and all that stuff to catch a 7 o'clock flight. And it's about 2.5 hours down to, we flew down to Rajahmundry this time. And so we get down to Rajahmundry probably 10:30, 11 o'clock, something like that. Brethren pick us up at the airport, and it's a small airport. Doesn't take long to grab your luggage there because you're watching them unload it off the plane and handing it to you. And about 30 minutes later, we pull in, and they've got an area meeting set up. And so we preach. Actually, I think Glenn preached at this area meeting. And we had several baptisms there, but they didn't give us any time to rest. They put us to work. We left there, went to Rampa, and had lunch. I think we'd done a few other things, but then they divided all three of us up, and we all had three places to go and preach that afternoon and that night. And this was every day. And so we were tired. We were wore out. We just needed to rest a little bit, but they sent us out. And I think my first place I got to, drove a long ways, was around 5 o'clock, had to preach, and then I had two more to do yet. And I'm sitting in the back seat of the car there, and I just can't stay awake any longer. And I put my head on my elbow on the edge of the window there and riding along, and I'm sleeping. Of course, if you've ever been to India, and Glenn can tell you about this, there's ruts in their ruts over there, and they hit one of them, and I fell off and woke me up. And I thought, this is pitiful. But we got it done, and we got back to Rampa. It was about 8:30, 9 o'clock that night, and got back there. I was the last one getting in. Well, I got to tell them about it, and turns out that Glenn and Zach both slept too in the car, so I didn't feel so bad. We were tired, but the brethren over there won't let you rest long. They're going to put you to work, and that's the way it should be. But we, many days, we would do things, and then we would separate, and we would go to at least three villages each preaching, and these are not 5 miles apart. They're spread out all over the country and into the jungle and everything, and I love it. We're offering loss to the hope, or hope to the loss. And John Ratnam, you see, preaching there, not only us, we go there for maybe a couple of weeks and preach at various locations. John preaches about 160 meetings a year. That's over an average of three a week that he's doing. And he's traveling constantly. And then he is responsible for coordinating everything that goes on over there in the preaching schools and those type of things, and the orphans, and all the work that's being going on. John and his brother-in-law are responsible for that. And so he's tireless. He's been sick the last month. He's been in the hospital, but I think he's doing better. And he had a liver transplant back about four or five years ago. But he's doing a lot better, and he is working himself to death. We're offering hope to orphans in India. There are 369 orphans in six homes. In Rampa, there are 266, and 103 and five other orphans there. It takes $50 a month to take care of those orphans. That's to feed them and to clothe them and to get them to school and do those type of things there. At Rampa, they were attending public school that several of our brethren there were teachers in that public school. But in the last couple of years, the Indian government says that you cannot preach Christianity, that you've got to preach the Hindu religion in education. And the brother in there said, we will not send these kids there to be indoctrinated by the Hindu doctrine. And so they are teaching them on their own and doing that. So they have 266 kids that they're teaching school to. They're teaching reading, writing, arithmetic, and English, and doing those things. But it's taken a lot of money for them to do that, and it's not coming. Not all of it's coming from the church at Willette and having them do this. But they are determined that these kids will not be indoctrinated with the Hindu religion. You see this building here. It's a new building that it was almost complete when we were there. That is at Rampa. On the bottom floor is a dining hall for the kids. And you got 266 kids. It takes a lot of rice to feed them. A lot of space to feed them, a lot of cooking to feed them their meals. And so they have a dining hall, and this top floor is a place for them to be able to go and to study their Bibles, to pray, do the things that they do when they're not at school. And so they're about to have that finished. We were able to go up there, and you in the bottom picture there, you'll see that that's all of the kids there at Rampa. They're gathered together, and they about fill that hall up. And we were able to, they sang songs for us, and then we, the three of us, handed them out candy, and of course they loved that. In the top picture up there is is a girls' home that's at Katamuru, there, and there's a lady there. I don't know if you can tell her, but she's from the States, and she traveled to India last year on her own by herself, and she's a member of the church, and she's just going around, and she was there at the school, and it's a girls' orphanage there. There's no boys there, and they take care of them there, and there's also a widow's home there. They're offering hopes to the widows also. There's 1,098 widows. 237 of them are living in six homes, and they get $25 a month to help them with their needs. If you would like to take care of a widow, you certainly can do that. It's not much. But 861 of them are supported with an average of about $4.75 a month. Those are widows who are not living in the home, and they may have a home, but they have, and you have to understand the society in India. A widow over there is going to be a widow all of her life. even though that's not what the Bible teaches. That's the culture over there, and it's a difficult thing to get them out of that. You see here, in the top left-hand corner there, there's a widow and her little boy and her sewing machine. And some of you here have been good about each year giving money to buy sewing machines for the widows over there. And that means, you know, it's $100 for a sewing machine. We think about, well, what does $100 do for her? But they give her a sewing machine, but not only do they give her a sewing machine, they teach them how to sew so that they can build themselves a trade and do that. And she, you see the smile on her face because she has an opportunity now to take care of her family. There are widows there. One of them, I think the top right is at Katamuru. There's widows there. And then the bottom is at Rampa. And each time we give them new dresses there, and they love that. And I guess they're like women everywhere. You know, they just have big bundles of these saris that we're handing out, but they are particular about what color they get. And you don't give them the right color, they'll ask for the right color. You know, they point to what they want, but we're glad to do that, and they get that about once a year. You see the lady in the bottom left, she is a widow. Her husband was the doctor at the clinic in Rampa. When he first came there, he was not a Christian. They employed him as a doctor there. He was not a Christian, but he obeyed the gospel. He and her both obeyed the gospel. He was involved in an automobile accident back about 3 or 4 years ago and eventually died from his injuries of that from that accident. And his family was Hindu, and of course, they would have absolutely nothing to do with her. She's left without anything. And John said, you will live here at the hospital. I'll give you a job at the hospital. So she works at the hospital helping dispense medicine and do those type of things. She has a job that she can take care of herself. That's what we're doing for the widows over there. There's one Lord. And we preach that over there, the one Lord. We preach that everywhere we go. The emphasis to the school of preaching this time that we did lessons at was one Lord. And then the last gospel meeting or area-wide meeting we had, the emphasis was on one Lord. There's one faith. As I said, there are many, many denominational preachers who are being converted over there. What happens? A denomination comes in. They'll teach them. They think they've converted them. Then they leave them. They're gone. And these men are then taught the truth. In the bottom picture you see there, that all of those men right there were once denominational preachers. Before they are allowed to preach in the church over there, they must attend this school and be taught the truth. Be taught all of the truth. And they spend a lot of time there learning the truth. The one faith is taught them so that when they do go out and preach, they go back to where they came from, they'll be preaching the truth. This is at Katamuru, and on this particular day, I don't know if you can see me sitting in the back there, but all three of us had lessons. Glenn and Zach and I had lessons there on the one God. But we also, that day, we had to do three villages. I mean, that's norm. You got to do your three villages preaching, and then we did this. So they spaced us out. I went to two villages, went to Katamuru, did my lesson, left, went back to another village. And then that night, we had to come back. We had these preachers are graduating from this Harrell School of Preaching, and it's a big event for them. To get a diploma saying that they've graduated from this school of preaching. And when we're there, we're the ones that have to put the robes and the gowns on and give them their diplomas, and it is a big thing for them. There's one baptism. Would you notice in the top left up there is that pit? That's a baptistry. And you notice the walls there. So it's probably not 5 foot wide there, but they got the baptistry built between those walls. And Zach said the first time he had ever been to this congregation, they didn't have a ladder. And they would get people down in there, but they were having trouble getting them out. And why they hadn't thought of putting a ladder in there, I don't know. But this time they put a ladder in there where they're baptizing people and getting them out. You'll see pictures of different baptisms going on there. Some of them may be in rice fields and ditches, in canals, they call them. Some of them in baptistries where the water's clean. But you notice in the bottom right, basically it's just a ditch with a culvert in it. And water is scarce over there in a lot of places. And so, but you never, never see anybody complaining about what they're being baptized in. They're being baptized, they're being buried in the water. And it doesn't matter if the water's muddy or clear or what it is, their sins are being washed away. There's one God and Father of all, and that's what we emphasize to the preaching students up there in the Harold School of Preaching, one God. And then the last area-wide meeting was the same thing there. But you notice on the left, this is a idol, and that idol is about probably 200 foot tall. That's taken from the highway a long ways from it. And so that tells you just how big it is. And there are idols everywhere over there. They have them everywhere. You notice on the right, and I want you to pay particular to his shoulder up there. And Zach said this is a place where they went to baptize some people, and it's kind of nasty. You can see the water looks back there. But this idol is falling apart. And that's what you have when you worship an idol. They're made by hands. They will fall apart. They will not stand. They will not last. This is the last area wide meeting that we had. And it's about 11 o'clock. We got up there. And so John said that Zach and Glenn Colley were going to preach, and that was fine with me. But you can see we got quite a crowd there, and the crowds kept coming in as we were preaching. They just kept coming in there, and of course, we had to preach there, and then we had our three villages to go to. And we had to do that, but they were going to continue preaching and teaching after we left there. But we preached there, and in this picture, you'll notice something is very unusual. These four people that were circled there are government officials. And this is something you just do not see in India. But these four government officials came to that area-wide meeting that day. And they weren't there to shut us down. They were there to be a part of it. That's great news for the church in India. Because so many places, that would not happen. And a lot of villages, you cannot build a church building unless those officials agree to it. If you need a church building, you have to get their permission to do it. They were there that day. They came in and sat down, and they heard the gospel preached. The gospel about the one God. And, of course, none of them obeyed the gospel, but they heard it preached. And which is a good thing for the church there. And hopefully this will continue to be a good place without interference from the government to be able to preach. This is at the same place, and you see how many people who came forward for baptism that day, where there were a good many of them. And then we left there and went on our journeys. We left there. And I've been to India enough that I know kind of which direction I'm going in and where we're headed when there's supposed to be that night. And we left there, and I was going the opposite direction of where we were headed to that night. So I knew it's going to be a long day for me. And it was. And so we headed back, actually, in the direction of Rampa, back in the jungles, and I preached at three different places. I opened up a new church building on a new highway they were building, which is unusual in India, but it was good. And then the last place I went to was back. We just kept going down a one-lane road in the jungle, and I thought, we'll never get there, because our driver and the brother that was with me evidently had not been to this place before, and so they were stopping and asking people how to get there. So I thought, we'll never get there. But we kept going, and we come around a corner, and I saw this rock formation up there, and I said, you know, I've seen this before. And I said, I've been here before. And sure enough, we went another 3 or 4 miles, and we pulled into a little village that I had preached at before, and I had the opportunity to preach then, there. But again, it was about 8:30 or 9 o'clock before I got home that night, and I was the last one in again. And, of course, they waited on me to go eat dinner, and we ate dinner. The next morning, we got up early. We caught the train. And I think John puts us on the train more for us than he does for being expedient. But we rode the train for about 4 hours up into the Araku Valley, up in the mountains. And to ride a train in India is quite an experience. We probably went through 30 tunnels. And you, as you go along, there's men always working on the railroad, on the tracks. And because those tracks were built during the British Empire days. And so they need constant work on them. And there are a lot of train wrecks over there. But you might come out of one of those tunnels that you went through, might be a mile long and it's totally dark. You come out and you look down, and I'm sitting by the window, and I look down and I cannot see the ground. It's probably 300 or 400 feet down to the ground, and we cross a little trestle. There's no side rails or anything on it, and this is the kind of train ride that we had. And we rode that for about 4 hours and got up in the mountains, and we each went to one village this day. This was our last day of preaching. Went to one village and preached there. We're on a tourist visa, so we're supposed to do tourist things. To satisfy the government there. And Araku Valley is a coffee region of India, famous for its coffee there. And we went to, that day, we went to the coffee museum and spent a few minutes there and got a cup of coffee. And I bought some chocolate-covered coffee, roasted coffee beans. So if you want to charge pretty quick, eat you a couple of those. But and then we journeyed back by car back to Vizag, where we caught our plane out early the next morning to come home. It was kind of bittersweet for me this time, because this would be my last trip there. And I really didn't want to leave, but I was ready to come home after 2 weeks. The work is going great there. And will continue to go great there. And you're a part of it. And you're a part of souls being saved. You'll notice in the report that's out there, there's already been 361 people baptized this year there by the preachers over there. So that work continues to grow. They continue to push it. And I hope we're able to continue to support this work for many years. Thank you for that. The theme, of course, that Zach had for this was Ephesians 4:4. The one God, the one faith, the one baptism, and that's what we preach over there. It may be tonight that you are in this audience and you've heard this preached many times, but you've never obeyed the gospel. There is no hope for you if you have not obeyed the gospel. You have to have the one baptism applied to you to wash away your sins so that you might be in the one church or the one body, so that you can go to heaven one day. If you've not obeyed the gospel, there's no better time than right now. There's no more time guaranteed than right now. You may be here tonight and you've been unfaithful. You need to be restored to faithful service to the church. We would love to be able to pray with you and to help you to overcome that. And we invite you all to come as we stand and sing.
We hope you have enjoyed this lesson from God's Word. If you would like to continue your study of New Testament Christianity, please send your name and address to World Bible School, West Huntsville Church of Christ, 1519 Old Monrovia Road, Northwest, Huntsville, Alabama, 35806. Or if you prefer, send your name and address by email to wbs@westhuntsville.org.